Section 4. Common Misconceptions About Political Issues. We now come to the first of these misconceptions, and that is, a Muslim ruler has the right to overrule the majority. It is generally believed, on the basis of the following verse, that the ruler of a Muslim state has the power to veto his confidants if he deems so. فَعْفُ عَنْهُمْ وَاسْتَغْفِرْ لَهُمْ وَشَاوِرْهُمْ فِي الْأَمْرِ فَإِذَا عَزَمْتَ فَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُتَوَكِّلِينَ. So ignore their faults and ask for God's forgiveness for them and consult them in the affairs of state. Then, when you have taken a decision, put your trust in God. Surah number 3, verse 159. This is an incorrect inference. It should be appreciated that the Quran is an internally coherent book and each verse has a specific context, which if disregarded may lead to gross misinterpretation. Now if you take a look at the context of the verse as is described by Imam Amin Hassan Islahi in his Tadabbur al-Quran, it becomes evident that the verse occurs in the group of verses in which the behavior of the hypocrites and the events of the Battle of Uhud and their aftermath are under discussion. The hypocrites, we know from the Quran, were given a time of respite so that they might reform themselves. However, once the time was over, they were severely dealt with, as is evident from many verses of the Quran. For example, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّبِيُّ جَاهِدِ الْكُفَّارَ وَالْمُنَافِقِينَ وَاغْلُظْ عَلَيْهِمْ وَمَأْوَاهُمْ جَهَنَّمْ وَبِئْسَ الْمَصِيرُ. O Prophet, strive hard against the disbelievers and the hypocrites, and be stern against them, and their abode is hell, and it is an evil refuge indeed. Surah number 66, verse 9. The Battle of Uhud was the time when they were still in the period of respite, so it was not appropriate to disregard them at that time. Consequently, the Prophet is told to keep consulting them in various affairs. However, he is not bound by what their majority says. If he decides contrarily, he should repose his trust in God and do what he has decided. This is a brief summary of the stress of the verse. A more detailed look at the context of this verse and at the various historical facts show that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam had consulted the Muslims on whether they should fight the enemy from within the city or from the outside. The hypocrites had opined that they should fight from within the city, while the true believers were of the opposite opinion. The Prophet, it seems, also held the latter opinion. So when he and the believers decided to go out and fight, the hypocrites became angry and expressed their anger in various ways. Abdullah ibn Ubay, for example, departed right before the battle with his 300 men, saying that his opinion was ignored. Once the battle was over, another group of hypocrites that stayed with the Muslims started spreading the propaganda that the defeat was due to the wrong strategy adopted. Consequently, the earlier verses, while addressing the hypocrites, mentioned these details in the following manner. يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تَكُونُوا كَالَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا وَقَالُوا لِإِخْوَانِهِمْ إِذَا ضَرَبُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ أَوْ كَانُوا غُزًّا لَوْ كَانُوا عِنْدَنَا مَا مَاتُوا وَمَا قُتِلُوا لِيَجْعَلَ اللَّهُ ذَلِكَ حَسْرَةً فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ وَاللَّهُ يُحْيِي وَيُمِيتُ وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ بَصِيرٌ وَلَئِنْ قُتِلْتُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَوْ مُتُّمْ لَمَغْفِرَةٌ مِنَ اللَّهِ وَرَحْمَةٌ خَيْرٌ مِمَّا يَجْمَعُونَ وَلَئِنْ مُتُّمْ أَوْ قُتِلْتُمْ لَإِلَى اللَّهِ تُحْشَرُونَ. Believers, be not like the disbelievers who say of their brethren when they are traveling through the land or fighting, if they had stayed with us, they would not have died or been slain, so that Allah may make a cause of regret in their hearts. It is God who gives life and death, and God knows what you do. And if you are killed or die in the way of God, forgiveness and mercy from God are far better than all the amass of worldly wealth. And whether you die or are killed, verily, unto God you shall be gathered. Surah number 3, verses 156 to 158. Consequently, it is clear from these verses that Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, in his capacity of a prophet, was advised to deal with the hypocrites of his times in a particular manner, as spelled out in the subsequent verse. In other words, this subsequent verse, also like the previous ones, refers to the hypocrites. The verse reads, فَعْفُ عَنْهُمْ وَاسْتَغْفِرْ لَهُمْ وَشَاوِرْهُمْ فِي الْأَمْرِ فَإِذَا عَزَمْتَ فَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُحِبُّ الْمُتَوَكِّلِينَ. So ignore their faults and ask for God's forgiveness for them and consult them in affairs. Then when you have taken a decision, put your trust in God. Surah number 3, verse 159. These verses cannot be related to us in any way today. Technically speaking, the antecedents of the plural accusative pronoun in the imperative word shawirhum, or consult them, are the hypocrites of the Prophet's times. Owing to his position as a prophet, Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was divinely guided in their affairs and was told to deal with them with latitude until the Almighty signaled to him that the period of respite was over. Consequently, the verse cannot be extended to anyone beyond the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. We now come to the second misconception, and that is, Muslims of a non-Muslim country should unite politically. Some people think that Islam directs all Muslims living in non-Muslim lands to unite under one leadership and present themselves as a single entity. Nowhere has Islam directed Muslims living in a non-Muslim country to unite under one leadership. This may serve their interest and be very beneficial for them. However, they have not been bound by their religion in this regard. It is up to them if they want to adopt such a policy. Some people do present the following verse to contend that Islam has directed Muslims to politically unite. Inna hadhihi ummatukum ummatan wahida wa ana rabbukum fa'buduni. Indeed, this ummah of yours is a single ummah, and I am your Lord and Cherisher. Surah number 21, verse 93. If the context of this verse is deliberated upon, it comes to light that the Quran is not directing the present Muslim ummah to remain united. On the contrary, the word ummah here is used for all the prophets which are mentioned in the preceding verses, that is 78 to 91. After enlisting most prophets, the Quran says that all these prophets are one ummah in the same sense that they brought the same religion, and it is the people who introduced innovations in it. In other words, the sentence, indeed, this ummah of yours is a single ummah, if interpreted keeping in view the context, refers to the collectivity of the prophets that came before Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. They have nothing to do with the Muslim ummah. We now come to the third misconception, and that is, defiance of anti-Islamic laws of a non-Muslim country. Some people are of the opinion that Muslims should defy the directives of the non-Muslim country where they are living if they are asked by the government to do something which is against Islam. It must be kept in mind that Muslims who have settled in non-Muslim countries are bound in a contract of citizenship. They must always honor this contract while living in such areas. They should respect the laws and live peacefully. They are bound by Islam to abide by the terms and conditions of any contract they make, and they must never violate them in the slightest way. Such violations, according to Islam, are totally forbidden and, in fact, amount to a grave transgression. The Quran says, فَأَوْفُ بِالْأَهْدِ إِنَّ الْأَهْدَ كَانَ مَسْئُولًا. And keep your covenants, because indeed, on the day of judgment, you will be held accountable for them. Surah number 17, verse 34. Consequently, Muslims must never break the laws of the country they live in. And if a situation comes when, owing to some law, they are not able to follow a directive of their religion that seems imperative to them, they should first of all bring the matter to the notice of the authorities. If it is not resolved, then instead of violating the law or creating nuisance, they should migrate from that country. This, of course, does not mean that this stance of a non-Muslim country is being endorsed. It amounts to denying a minority its basic rights and at times is tantamount to persecution. We now come to the fourth misconception, and that is, Muslims are duty-bound to establish an Islamic state. It may be clarified here that the clarification presented in this section is based on the view of Javed Ahmed Ghamidi. There are some Muslim scholars who think that each and every Muslim has been asked by Islam to strive to establish an Islamic state in case Islam does not reign supreme in the country he is living in. It needs to be appreciated that Muslims are not required by their religion to fulfill any such obligation. Some religious scholars do present the example of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and say that since he had established an Islamic state in Arabia, Muslims, wherever they are, should follow his example. In this regard, it is submitted that neither did the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam ever undertake the task of establishing an Islamic state. Nor was he ever directed by the Almighty to do so. The truth of the matter is that it is the Almighty who, according to his established practice regarding his messengers, took matters in his own hands in the time of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and bestowed him and his nation the supremacy of Arabia. Scholars who are of the opinion that Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam strove to establish an Islamic state in Arabia typically present the following verse in support of their view.
Huwallazi arsala rasulahu bil huda wa dinil haqq liyudhhirahu 'ala ad-din kullihi wa law karihal mushrikun.
It is he who has sent his messenger with guidance and the religion of truth, that he may proclaim it over all religions, even though the idolaters may detest this. Surah number 61, verse 9. On the basis of the phrase all religions, it is understood that the followers of Islam must struggle for its dominance in their respective countries and territories. An analysis of the context of this verse shows that it belongs to the class of directives that relate to the established practice of the Almighty regarding his messengers, according to which a messenger or a rasul always triumphs over his people who intentionally reject him. The Quran states,
"Inna allazina yuhadduna Allaha wa rasulahu ulaika fil adhallin. Kataballahu la'aghlibanna ana wa rusuli. Inna Allaha qawiyyun aziz."
Indeed, those who are opposing God and his messenger are bound to be humiliated. The Almighty has ordained, "I and my messengers shall always prevail. Indeed, God is mighty and powerful." Surah number 58, verses 20 and 21. Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was also informed that he would triumph over his people in case they deliberately reject him. He and his companions were told that they would have to fight the idolaters of Arabia until the supremacy of Islam was achieved therein, and that these idolaters should be informed that if they do not desist from their evil ways, then they too would meet a fate no different from those of the other nations who denied their respective messengers. The Quran states,
قُلْ لِلَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا إِنْ يَنْتَهُوا يُغْفَرْ لَهُمْ مَا قَدْ سَلَفْ وَإِنْ يَعُودُوا فَقَدْ مَضَتْ سُنَّةُ الْأَوَّلِينَ وَقَاتِلُوهُمْ حَتَّى لَا تَكُونَ فِتْنَةٌ وَيَكُونَ الدِّينُ كُلُّهُ لِلَّهِ.
Say to these disbelievers that if they now desist from disbelief, their past would be forgiven. But if they persist, the punishment of those before them is already a warning for them. And fight against them until there is no more persecution, and prevails there the religion of God. Surah number 8, verses 38 to 40. Consequently, it is to be noted that the word al-mushrikun, or the idolaters, is used in verse 9 of Surah 61, quoted earlier. The Quran uses this word specifically for the idolaters of Arabia of the Prophet's times. As a result, all religions in the conjugate clause can only mean all the religions of Arabia at that time. So the verse has no bearing on Muslims after the times of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Therefore, striving to achieve the political supremacy of Islam is not any religious obligation of a Muslim, let alone waging jihad to achieve this supremacy. The verses from which this obligation has been construed specifically relate to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. We now come to the fifth misconception, and that is, Muslim rulers shall always belong to the Quraysh. It must be clarified at the beginning that the clarification presented here is adapted from the view of Imam Amin Ahsan Islahi and Javed Ahmad Ghamidi. On the basis of the following narrative attributed to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam by Anas ibn Malik radiyallahu anhu, it is generally believed that a Muslim ruler must belong to the Quraysh, which is the tribe of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The words of the narrative are, "The rulers shall be from the Quraysh." An-Nisa'i, As-Sunan al-Kubra, Volume 3, page 467, Hadith number 5942. If this is correct, then it would mean that there is no difference between Islam and Brahmanism, in which only a specific tribe has the prerogative to rule. It needs to be appreciated that every narrative must be interpreted in the light of the Quran. According to the Quranic verse, أَمْرُهُمْ شُورَى بَيْنَهُمْ, or their system is based on their consultation, in the absence of a consensus, the majority opinion would decide the affairs of the Muslims. Thus, in the light of this directive, a tradition was established from the time of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam that the tribe who held the conference of the majority would be granted the reins of power. Since in the time of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam this status was occupied by the Quraysh, the Prophet, merely following this Quranic injunction and fearing that the leaders of the minority groups might stake a claim to power, clarified that the rulers shall be from among the Quraysh. While citing the reason for this, he is reported to have said, "People in this matter follow the Quraysh. The believers of Arabia are the followers of their believers, and the disbelievers of Arabia are the followers of their disbelievers." Muslim, Al-Jami' As-Sahih, Volume 3, page 1451, Hadith number 1509. In other words, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam made it very clear that since the majority of the Arabian Muslims professed confidence in the Quraysh, they were solely entitled to take charge as the rulers of Arabia in the light of the Quranic directive, أَمْرُهُمْ شُورَى بَيْنَهُمْ, or their system is based on their consultation, and that they would be passed on the political authority not because of any racial precedence or superiority, but only by virtue of this position. It follows from this that the Quraysh were entitled to rule after the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam as long as they enjoyed the confidence of the majority, and once they lost this confidence, they were not entitled to rule.